This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 9th of October 2020. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 9th of October, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. The extracts are being read for you today by John Richards.
Hello.
And me, Keith Vincent. Now, this is the first recording since we were forced to suspend our recording in March due to the restrictions imposed by the coronavirus pandemic. And I'm pleased to be able to return to the recording studio now in a new location in Twyford, thanks to the generosity of Humphrey Farms, to whom we're deeply indebted. Appropriate protective measures have been put in place in the studio to protect our volunteers, which has also required us to reduce the number of people, so for the foreseeable future you will only hear just two voices on each recording rather than the usual four. We hope it won't spoil your enjoyment of the recording. For the safety of you, the listener, we will ensure that the memory sticks and wallets are sanitised before they leave the studio, but please remember that the wallet will pass through the postal system before it's delivered to you. So please take precautions when opening the wallet, as you would with any other post that you receive. Now, the main headlines for the Chronicle this week: COVID forces axing of the Christmas market, fresh blow to city hospitals' future, and Festival of Light to replace fireworks. So, John, may we please have the story behind the first headline?
Yes, which is COVID forces axing of the Christmas market. Christmas in Winchester will be a little different this year. As previously reported online, the annual market in the cathedral grounds has been cancelled. The announcement was made just days after organisers had been given planning permission. The Chronicle had gone to press when the announcement was made on Wednesday afternoon. A spokeswoman said, "With health and safety being paramount, the decision came after exploring all possible options with the support of partners, including Winchester City Council, Winchester BID, the Safety Advisory Group and Public Health England. There will be a financial impact for the 30 charities, 120 small independent retailers, local business and suppliers across the region that the market supports, as well as for Winchester Cathedral." Councillor Paula Ferguson, who had spoken in strong support of the market at the planning committee, which gave permission, said, "Christmas is such a special time in Winchester, but this year it will be a little different. We fully support the cathedral's decision to put the well-being and safety of our residents and visitors first by cancelling the annual Christmas market." MP Steve Brine said, "With the heaviest of hearts, I think this is the right decision, not because I believe an outside market is a great risk, or that we're a hot spot of rising infection, or because of the large numbers it could bring into the city from other areas that might be. I'm not convinced we couldn't, still could perhaps, be creative and see local festive events for local people this year. But either way, nobody should pretend this won't have a serious impact on our precious cathedral."
And the next headline is "Fresh Blow to City Hospital's Future." A new hospital looks set to be built in Basingstoke as part of a package worth £3.7 billion announced by central government. The news will come as a blow to hopes that the Royal Hampshire County Hospital will retain its A&E unit and the consultant-led maternity unit at Florence Portal House. Prime Minister Boris Johnson confirmed funding for 40 hospitals across England to be built by 2030. The government said it is earmarking money for a new hospital at Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital and major refurbishment at RHCH in Winchester. However, no further details were given in terms of when this work will be carried out or what a major refurbishment at the RHCH would entail. Last week, the Chronicle reported that health bosses were considering several options, most of which would see A&E, consultant-led maternity and other specialist services, go to a new hospital. The government announcement came only days later. The announcement comes as the NHS carries out ongoing consultations on options for the proposed new facilities. Hampshire Together, Modernising Our Hospitals and Health Services, is currently working on revamping the region's hospital services, and a public consultation is due in the spring. A spokesman insisted the consultation would go ahead before any decisions on hospital services were made. He said even if the government has announced Basingstoke as the location of a new hospital, that was not binding. Steve Bryan, MP, said, "There's no question the Trust faces significant pressure to centralise certain services. Some of that external, around neonatal care, for instance, some of it not. I've consistently said this project is primarily about replacing Basingstoke Hospital, and the PM confirmed that. But he also made clear, as we promised at the election, it will see significant investment at the RHCH, and I remain of the view Winchester needs and deserves a district general hospital with an emergency department and consultant-led maternity services. I know it's difficult, and I know the Trust want a clinical model that does its best by us all, but I would urge them to keep an open mind even at this stage and not to give up on Winchester Hospital, because we have not." Lib Dem County Councillor Martin Todd said, "I'm concerned that this decision has been rushed ahead to solve a political problem for the Conservative Party rather than being properly thought through. While it's reassuring to know that investment is planned for Winchester, it's disappointing they seem to have preempted the decision to put the new hospital at Basingstoke." A group on Twitter, Save Winchester Hospital, tweeted about the Chronicle story last week. It said, "This means the end of Winchester Hospital as we know it, yet the population of Winchester is due to grow by 30% over the next 10 years, and the population is getting older and needing more care. The ecological implications of a green site build and of requiring more people to drive are also significant. The new hospital will be away from main bus routes and population centres."
Festival of Light to replace fireworks. This year's fireworks display by Winchester Round Table will be like no other in its 60 plus years history. Organisers have reimagined the event as Light Up Winchester after cancelling the traditional torchlight procession, display and bonfire at River Park. Instead, they are organising a celebration of all things bright and beautiful in the form of a blended live streaming of city activity, as well as mass community participation of torch and candle bearing. On Saturday, November the 7th at 7 p.m, the public is being invited to Light Up Winchester. Using a combination of torches and wax candles, members of the public will raise their lights into the sky at the same time as spectacular fireworks are set off from three secret and private locations around the city. Harnessing the latest in drone filming technology, a live stream of both the fireworks and the streets lit up by the public will be broadcast. In return for organising this Festival of Light, residents and bonfire supporters are invited to make a donation in lieu of the usual cost of their bonfire ticket. The 2019 event raised £60,000, and that money will be missed by the city at a time when the effects of COVID-19 are impacting communities. The annual bonfire is a not-for-profit event. The proceeds collected from the generous sponsors, local residents and out-of-town visitors all go to supporting local groups and charities for the following 12 months. Money is spent on activities including supporting Winchester Young Carers based in Winnell, providing spaces for disadvantaged children to participate in swimming with Penguin Swimming Club, and the creation of legacy funds. Multi-year commitments of support, such as for the night shelter. Be on the lookout for Santa's sleigh for 10 nights leading up to the event on November the 7th. Santa is lending his support to light up Winchester from the October the 26th. The sleigh will travel on 10 routes around the city and surrounding areas, bringing the essence of Light Up Winchester to the doorsteps with music and light. Mark Carter, the 2020 Winchester Roundtable Bonfire Chairman, said, "The bonfire and fireworks evening has been a huge part of my life and many Winchester residents for over 60 years, and it's a real loss to have to cancel the 2020 event. I am determined not to only spread some seasonable goodwill on the night, but to continue the legacy of fundraising and distributing those funds to those in need."
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements. The following deaths were announced this week. Dealey, Donald Frederick Leonard Dealey, died peacefully in hospital, aged 93. Drawbridge, Susan Annette Drawbridge, née Patton, who passed away at home on the 24th of September. Gibbs, George Gibbs, passed away on the 25th of September. Green, Jean Margaret Green, formerly of Winchester, died suddenly at her home in Devon, aged 95. Harden, Janet Mary Harden, née Lynch, died suddenly at home on the 21st of September. Hooker, Connie Hooker, died peacefully on the 26th of September, aged 93. James, Christopher Martin James, died peacefully at home, aged 73. Meikle, Winifred Ann Meikle, née McGuinness, died in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 1st of October, aged 81. Moulton, Alan Moulton, died on the 28th of September, aged 95. Rabbits, Sheila Rabbits, died peacefully on the 29th of September, aged 84. And Smith, George Mitchell Smith, died peacefully at home on October the 4th. So now, John, we have a Christian comment, please.
Yes, indeed. And it's written this week by the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is priest in charge of St Faith's Parish at St Cross in Winchester. And the title of Christian comment this week is Humble, Thankful Hearts. Winchester Green Week coincided here at St Cross with our Harvest Festival. For some people, such celebrations are irrelevant now that few of us work actively on getting the harvest in. Yet for Christians, the idea of harvest is broader than the crops garnered in autumn. It expresses the truth that all the good things of creation, the plants yielding seed, the snow in winter, the warmth to swell the grain, the breezes and the sunshine, and soft, refreshing rain, are things we receive as gifts from God. Humankind plays our part. We plough the fields and scatter the seed. We show enterprise and work faithfully. But we remain dependent on the Creator. He only is the maker of all things, near and far. He paints the wayside flower. He lights the evening star. The truth that all is gift leads to the two themes which until recently understandably dominated our harvest celebrations. The first is thankfulness. If someone gives you a present, you say thank you. All good gifts around us are sent from heaven above, so thank the Lord for all his love. The second is generosity. We receive God's gifts, most of the time in great abundance. If you are given far more than you can possibly consume yourself, the right response is to give generously to others who don't. This is a point I often make to my children on Easter Day as I look longingly at their huge piles of chocolate eggs, jokingly, of course. Well, mostly jokingly. But seriously, what is the alternative to generosity? It is seeking to keep more than we need or could ever need, building bigger and bigger storehouses, fuller and fuller bank accounts. Jesus says, while that may seem worldly wise, it in fact brings only an inner emptiness. This is a good time to give generously, for example, to Winchester Basics Bank, a vital resource for our city. In our time, a third theme has been added to our harvest celebrations, caring for creation. If you give someone a beautiful present, you expect them to look after it, so God expects us to be good stewards of his creation and to live sustainably. That's one good reason that this year's Green Week saw hundreds of people attending online events. We had moving thoughts for the day, still available on the Green Week Facebook page. There are ongoing activities like the Ubi local veg box delivery scheme out of our own backyard. We know that the gifts of creation are given to us to use and not abuse. When we are overcome by our desire for more and more, then we begin to abuse the gifts. This has horrible consequences for ecosystems other species depend on, and due to pollution and climate change, for human health also. In place of the desire to possess more and more, we need a change of heart. That is our best, and in fact our only, possible response to God's gifts. No gifts have we to offer, for all thy love imparts, but what thou most desirest, our humble, thankful hearts.
Thank you, John. Now we move on to the letters to the editor. I'll start with the first one, headed Disruptive Plan, written by Simon Lever. Sir, the saga of Winchester NHS continues, where the excellent A&E facility has long been under threat by NHS managers. Should, for example, the A&E facility move to Basingstoke or even Southampton, the mere extra journey time by ambulance alone will potentially prove life-threatening for critical cases. What about patients' families' natural desire to visit their loved ones? Both Basingstoke and Southampton's maze of low-capacity, expensive parking would create further distress. Through personal experience, I have nothing but admiration for the vocational care facilitated by local frontline NHS staff, including A&E. Would staff who are actually engaged in saving lives be expected to relocate? The case for such disruptive and unnecessary plans are vague and totally unconvincing. NHS management should engage with the people of Winchester and area to gain a real life assessment. Indeed, over to the people. And that's by Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And this letter, entitled Shame and Snitch, is from James Anderson. Sir, on September the 24th, the Chronicle carried a front-page photograph of young people on the Cathedral Green. Claire Diedrichson replied, letters October the 1st, effectively questioning whether a shame and snitch society was helpful or damaging to the social fabric. Surprisingly, the letters editor chose to climb into the ring and join the argument. Whether or not the lockdown controls have saved lives is an open question, and not the settled science that is claimed. I can only speak for myself as an elderly person. I am more than capable of looking after myself, where to go, whom to meet, how close to meet, and how to wash my hands. Any link to young people has too many ifs, buts, and maybes to add up to an actual risk. Let us not pretend that those young people who are enjoying the sunshine on the green are somehow putting the elderly at risk. That's from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
The next letter is headed Flawed Scheme from Steve Harborn, Worthy Lane, Winchester. Sir, Councillor Todd and unnamed traffic chiefs continue to defend their flawed North Wall's social distancing measures despite mounting concern. Many letters to this paper have drawn attention to the obvious flaws in the scheme, yet the response, apart from the welcome removal of some barriers in Jury Street, has been to dig in and claim that the scheme is working well and just needs a few tweaks to resolve remaining problems. Frankly, this is beyond belief. Simple questions go unanswered, and it's hardly surprising if residents and other road users are left feeling there's a hidden agenda. Attempting to claim the moral high ground by making assertions such as, "We mustn't forget why we are doing this," is an insult to the intelligence of those who disagree. We all understand the dangers posed by COVID-19, but just happen to believe that the attempt to create some element of social distancing on North Walls, which has led to the total closure of Hyde Street, is misguided. Relatively few pedestrians use North Walls, and the consequences of coning off a short stretch of road for minimal pedestrian benefit has been massive. Councillor Todd says he cannot see how pedestrians could manage to cross this busy road if one-way pavements had been introduced. He clearly hasn't noticed the four sets of traffic lights and crossing points between City Road and Park Avenue, which people manage to use with apparent ease. Post-lockdown, the pattern of traffic does seem to be changing, and if anything, getting worse. Closing a key route towards the city centre was a bold but ultimately foolish step to take. The more regular and heavier tailbacks on Worthy Lane through to the Albion Junction and City Road are exactly as predicted, with many health and environmental consequences for local residents, pedestrians and cyclists using these routes. Continuing to minimise these consequences by refusing to admit that resolving the problems created will need more than a few tweaks is worrying indeed. And that's from Steve Harborne, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
"We did ask," writes Mrs. P. Dollery, "Sir, yet again we have a notice on the board at Braxton House concerning the new buildings going up on this site. It states you may have access to the Microsoft Teams meeting on October the 15th by computer, laptop, tablet and smartphone between 3 and 4pm to give your views. Most people are at work at these times, or mothers picking up their children from school. One can't help thinking that the City Council do this on purpose, as it is an inconvenient time for most people, and the ones that are dead against the building are spent pensioners who have no access to all these contraptions. The vast majority of people, pensioners etc., are all dead against these buildings, but will have no access to air their views. On reflection, what does it matter? The council never listens to any concerns we have, and we know how they work, with no consideration for people who have lived here over 50 years and bought their flats for a peaceful retirement, not to be overcrowded. It is, as always with Winchester City Council, cut and dried, no matter what concerns we have. They will go ahead. Why ask? No doubt when it's all done, the council will say, 'We did ask,' to cover their wily ways and disruption of people's lives, but not in my backyard, though. We are in the most polluted area of Winnell, and the council continue to put children in this area without a care for their health and safety. What on earth is this town coming to with this council?" That strong letter is from Mrs. P. Dollery, Winnell Manor Road, Winnell, Winchester.
And Bill Hode writes, "Double standards." Excuse me. "Sir, what with this being Green Week, it's becoming clear that some members of the Winchester and Hampshire councils are condoning double standards. The measures to combat social massing just seem to funnel people into the city centre where they mix and pass each other unmasked, and with no respect for social distancing. The High Street has been clearly marked with arrows, the Brooks Shopping Centre has arrows and a one-way system, but the general public seem to be oblivious to all these helpful suggestions. I feel it's time to rethink the closures that have been made and to reopen Hyde Street and take away the social distancing barriers in North Walls and Jury Street. St George's Street, with narrow pavements and many more pedestrians, does not have them. With their removal, people will be able to make their own decisions as to how to deal with the problem. One of the advantages that this will have is faster moving traffic and a reduction in pollution. This does, however, once again prompt the question, is there something sinister in these closures? Are they perhaps part of some undisclosed plan for the future? If there are plans to make some of these measures permanent, perhaps the council could let us in on what appears to be a closely guarded secret. And that's from Bill Hode, Worthy Lane, Hyde, Winchester.
Christopher James Perry writes to the editor about women's rights. Sir, the Back to 60 campaign has lost its appeal in the High Court, but all is not lost as the Women Against State Pension Inequality are still active. And former Pensions Minister Baroness Ross Altman would appear to support some compensation on grounds of maladministration. These women were not written to in 1995 when it was intended to raise the state pension age for women from 60 to 65 over a 10-year period between 2010 and 2020. Neither were they written to in 2011 when this was both speeded up and raised to 66. Women born in the 1950s might have spent half their working lives paying national insurance, believing they would get their pension at 60. Some may now get up to £40,000 less than the entitlement they thought they'd paid in for. Surely there should be a legally binding contract from the time one pays one's first contribution, whether it be to a private pension scheme, an occupational pension, or state pension. That's from Christopher James Perry, Southampton Road, Hythe.
This letter says, Rethink Cycling is from Sue Coles, the secretary of part of Cycling UK. So I refer to the letter in the Chronicle of October the 1st. It's disappointing that the writer seeks to set cyclists against public transport, as both are means of transport that should be encouraged. Congestion in Winchester as a result of too much traffic and the resultant inconvenience and pollution is not caused by cyclists but by too many cars. Priority in central Winchester should be given to pedestrians, cyclists, public transport, particularly if it's electric powered, and then the private car, in that order. If we can reduce the number of cars coming into central Winchester, we can provide residents and visitors with the ability to choose a more sustainable form of transport. In addition, on hilly roads such as Romsey Road and Stockbridge Road, uphill cycle lanes can help reduce delays, and we should be encouraging the Highway Authority to introduce these as soon as possible. The writer also asserts that cycling will always remain a minority interest and is inaccessible to children and the elderly. There will, of course, be some who are unable to cycle for reasons of age or infirmity, and good public transport links, complemented by the use of the private car when necessary, must be part of the solution. However, if you look at the age profile of those already cycling in Winchester, I think you'll find that many of them are in the elderly category, and I count myself as one of them. In addition, with the increasing availability of electric bikes, the percentage of those able to cycle in Winchester is likely to increase significantly. Similarly, many children would love to cycle and could cycle to school if there was less traffic. It gives them independence and increases their physical and mental well-being. We should not be depriving them of that opportunity, but encouraging them and facilitating that choice. Most cyclists are car drivers, but choose to cycle because it's non-polluting, a healthy form of exercise, fun, and one less car on the road. And that's from Sue Coles, the secretary of Winchester CTC, part of Cycling UK, Week Winchester.
This letter, entitled Power Grab, is from Celia Dowden, leader of the Liberal Democrat group at Test Valley Borough Council, and she's ward for North Baddersley. Sir, Liberal Democrats have warned that the government's planning proposals will disempower local authorities like Test Valley and allow developers to run roughshod over local communities' wishes. People living in Test Valley are the people best placed to make sure planning decisions shape our communities for the better. But this Conservative government's planning reforms will strip away local people's ability to shape those decisions and is a developer's charter. With 9 out of 10 planning proposals approved nationwide, it's certainly not the planning system that's causing the problems. Liberal Democrats in Test Valley wholeheartedly object to these proposals, which do nothing to ensure an adequate supply of affordable housing, undermine our climate commitments, and put our local heritage at risk. Instead of addressing the root cause of the housing crisis, the Tories' proposals serve the interests of wealthy developers, giving them carte blanche to run roughshod over local communities' wishes. That's from Celia Dowden, leader of the Liberal Democrat group at Test Valley Borough Council, ward member for North Baddersley, Neath Way Valley Park.
And this one's headed Marathon Task. Sir, if there was ever to be an award for the organiser of a mass participation event, surely J.J. Heath Caldwell and his team of supporters from Winchester and Salisbury Rotary, together with all the sponsors, should be at the top of the list for all their hard work to ensure the recent Clarendon Marathon and associated distances took place when virtually all other races have been cancelled. With adverse conditions from both the sky and underfoot, and the dark, malevolent shadow of COVID-19 hanging over the event, JJ very professionally managed and adapted the event with complete safety of the competitors and volunteers in mind. Our safety was never in doubt, making it a very successful day for everyone who took part in this annual charity event. And that's from Steve Goodwin, Goring Field, Tegdown, Winchester.
Bob Whitmarsh talks about more floods amid climate crisis. Sir, I read in your paper online that Councillor Murphy recently said that, quote, "The recent flash flooding in Winchester has been an unwelcome reminder to us all about the effects of the climate emergency. Freak weather events like this will become more and more common unless we step up our efforts," unquote. She is right. And the flash flooding she mentions was not just a one-off event. I went for a short walk yesterday afternoon, Friday, October the 2nd, and observed the impact of heavy rain from Storm Alex. I encountered three places around Tegdown where the road was underwater to depths of several inches or more, even covering the pavement at one point. There must have been many more examples across Winchester. Normally, the drains should take care of prolonged rain, but that won't happen if they're blocked by debris, either on the surface or underground, which from my observations on drier days seems to be the state of many drain grids. Clearly, the City Council could do a lot more to keep the drains clear, particularly as we are likely to experience more storms like Alex. Then it would not be necessary for some homeowners to construct a miniature bund at the top of their drive, also observed on my walk, to prevent surface water flooding their driveways or even reaching their front doors. A recent WINAC report highlighted the lack of progress that Winchester District has made to cut its energy consumption and greenhouse gas emissions since 2013. This was not just an academic exercise, since events like Storm Alex are the direct result of increasing emissions from prosperous areas like Winchester in particular. We really do need to step up our efforts. So writes Bob Whitmarsh, Berwick Avenue, Week, Winchester.
Thank you, John. That concludes the letters. And now we're going to move on to Chronicle editorial comment, please, John.
Yes, certainly. Which is entitled "A Salute to the Man Who Saved Barracks." In 1985, the last soldier locked the gates of Peninsula Barracks, with the Light Division moving up the road to Sir John Moore Barracks in Littleton. The Victorian Barracks was left to gently deteriorate as the City Council decided its future. Does this sound familiar? In 1989, the City Council decided they wanted to demolish most of the buildings on the site and build housing and a multi-storey car park with an entrance off Southgate Street. There were grumblings, and then the UK entered the recession of the early 1990s. That gave one local man the chance to try to save the barracks. He was a local architect, and his name was Hugh Thomas. He felt Winchester deserved better. It would be fair to say his one-man campaign was crucial in stirring national opposition to the proposals. Mr. Thomas died at the weekend. His legacy is on the one hand a large number of buildings built in the city, including on Blue Ball Hill, Eastgate Street and Littleminster Street. It is also Peninsula Barracks. The Chronicle does not usually devote its editorial comment to one man, but Mr. Thomas deserves it.
You're now first person. This the call, The Time for Wild Flowers, and this is submitted by Joanna Lewis. I just can't forget Jerry. Sometimes you meet people, however fleetingly, who stay with you. Jerry, now retired, is a collector. He's amassed thousands of tiny plants, the ones that look like little stones. His modest suburban garden, a greenhouse and a couple of lean-to sheds are all full of what look like miniature clubfoots, which can suddenly produce a single flower out of an unpromising crack. He propagates them by plucking a hair from his own head. "They'll be with me until my end," he told Monty on Gardener's World a few months ago. I assumed at this point he was single. That was unfair and wrong of me, for Jerry has a wife who also shares his passion. A relationship built on one part compost and two part sand, taking care not to overwater. Jerry partly stayed with me because of nostalgia. His world reminded me of my grandparents and time I spent with them when growing up. I would seek out my grandfather in his shed, for him less a lifestyle choice and more following orders, but he was content there. It was full of boxes of nails, lathes and manly twine. He'd be sitting on a tall stool working out something, a pencil behind his ear. In 5 minutes I would have messed up his orderly system, broken something, or hit my head on a rake handle. "Go and find your grandmother," he would say. Indoors, she would be sewing, embroidering, or darning. What I would give now to be at their feet once more, but this time paying more attention. They had hobbies that involved creating things, making and mending, not consuming and collecting. I recently had a sort out and did a car boot sale. I was appalled by the amount of stuff I'd hoarded. My hobby has been buying stuff I don't need. Amongst the tat were 25 teapots, 5 thermos flasks, unused, and a collection of wombles in one cupboard. My new hobby is my students, making more time for them in their second lockdown. Super talented and young, their lives are ahead of them, but unemployment, debt and uncertainty snap at their heels. I worry they're feeling trapped and experiencing loss. There's a huge generational inequality in what the future holds, especially in relation to what my generation and above could expect if you worked hard and were smart. Meanwhile, locally, we have a sharp rise in unemployment, not just among the 20-somethings, but women and men in their 40s and 50s, just when you have all that experience and maturity to share. I doubt those people and companies who've made millions in property and finance will examine in good conscience how their wealth has been built in predatory ways by making others asset poor and financially vulnerable, and then give back. But everyone and anyone can help a young person, a depressed person, or an unemployed person. Offer to mentor someone. Once a week, have someone shadow you in your work. Take time out to pass on a skill, even if it is more of a hobby or a pastime. Think about becoming an unpaid informal life coach. Write down what you wish you had known, learnt or believed when you were young and then pass it on. Throw in your 9-to-5 job if you're lucky enough to be able to and build a new life. Less work, less spending and less stuff. Instead of click and collect, meet and greet. For it's possible to see an upside to where we are now. We can see more clearly the cracks in our society. We're throwing off conventions, questioning entrenched patterns, and wearing more pyjamas. We're turning our smaller, confined spaces into new worlds of discovery, and our creativity is blooming. As the song goes, when flowers grow wild, they can always survive. Wild flowers don't care where they grow from. John, now we have a couple of items from Belgarum.
Yes, here's Belgarum this week, an alternative look at the news, as it's always called. The first, the two pieces, the first one is entitled Feeling Festive Yet? And there's a photograph here of Christmas lights in City Road, and this photograph was taken in September against a lovely blue sky. Yes, those really are Christmas lights up in City Road and other streets in the city centre, including Jury Street. The photo was taken last Wednesday, September the 29th. Belgarum may be wrong, but is aware of such an early start. We know the lights have not yet been switched on. That will happen in November. But still. The next piece, Green Shop. The Way Forward? Winchester now has its very own zero-waste shop. Earthian has swung open its doors in Parchment Street and offers a range of plastic-free and low-waste products. Customers are encouraged to bring their own tubs, jars and bottles to stock up home and beauty essentials. The owner, Katie Campling, said, "I never wanted the shop to only offer goods. My hope is for Earthian to become a hub for sustainable activities that offer solutions for the problems around waste too. As well as organic food, herbs, spices and coffee, you can also pick up your liquid cleaning products such as laundry liquid, shampoo and conditioner, all without creating any unnecessary waste. Shopping zero waste is easy to do. Simply bring your containers to the counter to be weighed first, then start filling from the dispensers and drums. Once you have everything you need, head back to the counter where the weight of your container will be taken off the final tally, so you only pay for what's inside. Earthian is also a collection point for TerraCycle, a recycling company that takes hard-to-recycle waste. It takes in milk bottle tops and bread bags. There are plans to expand this list in the future."
Thank you. Now, we have no What's On this week. There are no features in the Chronicle, and it's difficult to predict what will and won't take place. So we've not included a What's On feature. Lighting up time ends Friday the 9th of October at 7:20 a.m. and begins at 6:24 p.m. And next Wednesday the 14th of October, it ends at 7:25 a.m. and begins at 6:20 p.m. If you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz LeGrice. That's a new number this time, Liz LeGrice on 01962 861 229. That's Liz LeGrice on 01962 861 229. And now we continue with items of general news.
Council U-turn allows funfair to return. It's off? No, it's on. The funfair in Alresford has been on a roller coaster ride and is set to return to the market town on Thursday, October the 15th, after civic chiefs reversed their stance. The annual event had been cancelled after civic chiefs said the risk to public health was too great. The fair is held every October in Broad Street, closing the road to through traffic for a day. It was due to be held on Thursday, October the 15th, and usually attracts thousands of people. But last Wednesday, after the Chronicle went to press, John Searle Funfairs and the hosts, Alresford Town Trust, were told that the City and County Councils were allowing the event. Simon Bryant, Director of Public Health at Hampshire County Council, in a letter to Mr. Searle said that although he did not want it to go ahead, it did not, quotes, quite cross the threshold, allowing us to issue a direction to close your operation. He went on, "I understand and appreciate the considerable lengths to which you have gone to make your fair as COVID secure as possible, and I do appreciate the business implications for you and other funfair operators should your event not go ahead. However, despite this, as the Public Health Authority for this area, We remain profoundly worried about the position of the pandemic nationally and locally and your ability to keep the public safe whilst visiting your fair. These concerns relate to all events at which large numbers of people may potentially gather and mingle, and where they will be making shared contact with equipment such as your fair rides. And that's unquote. It eventually stopped all that. Mr. Searle said, "We are very pleased this has been turned round. Alsford is a chartered fair going back many generations, and I've been attending this fair all my life. Everything is now sorted, and the fun fair will be going ahead on Thursday, 15th of October, from 3 p.m. It'll be great to see the children and teenagers with smiles on their faces again." The County Council has been asked to comment. Alsford Town Trust Chairman Robin Atkins said the Trust relied on the experts, but added, "Whatever they do, they must act fairly and in accordance with natural justice. They need to assess the public health risk against the precautions the fair will take."
Warning that development could be pushed onto city. Thousands of homes proposed for the Winchester district could be pushed to the north of the district if a green belt is backed. City councillors have expressed fears over a vision for a large protected area in South Hampshire which would stop new developments being built. The South Hampshire Green Belt designation would stretch from the edge of Waterlooville to Wickham and round to Hursley if approved. A motion was put forward to full council by Conservative group leader on Winchester City Council, Carolyn Horrell, aimed to gain support from members for the principle of a green belt for the countryside north of the cities of Portsmouth and Southampton. She said, "South Hampshire has experienced a substantial amount of development over the last 60 years. It has seen its population grow, the expansion of its cities and larger towns into the countryside, and completely new communities established. Four district councils in our area have been asked to support the principle of a green belt for South Hampshire, which includes the countryside north of the cities of Portsmouth and Southampton. The idea was given the backing from Tory and independent councillors, with Councillor Victoria Weston saying, "We're seeing the loss of countryside, our important wetlands and grassland that play a huge part of the biodiversity of our district. So we need to stop unrestricted sprawl in the countryside." But Lib Dems argued that if a green belt was developed, it would force housing to the north and west of the Winchester district, as much of the area is already covered by the South Downs National Park, which is protected from major housing schemes. Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, Kelsey Learney, told council, "In combination with the National Park and the government pledge to build 300,000 new homes per year, a pledge which has led to a proposed 10-year housing target of over 10,000 homes for this district, the proposal will definitely push damaging and unsustainable levels of development to the west, north and northeast of Winchester, as well as into existing settlements. To be fair to all our residents in the district, we must consider how we best protect countryside and open space across the whole district, not just part of it." The City Council has been drawing up its response to the White Paper, pointing out that many issues, not least that 40% of the district is controlled for planning by the South Downs National Park. The Cabinet last Tuesday heard there was cross-party support from Conservatives and Liberal Democrats over the instruction from central government to build 1,000 houses a year instead of 600. Steve Tilbury, strategic director, in his penultimate day in the job before retiring, pointed out that with the new 1,000 figure, the council could not show it had a 5-year land supply, which could allow developers a free hand to apply for permission for their schemes. But councillors pointed out that developers were not building the homes they already had planning permission for. Councillor Learney pointed out that the example of Barton Farm. Outline planning permission was given in October 2012, but development did not start until July 2016. 4 years on, only 400 of the 2,000 homes have been built. She said, It's not the local authorities' failure or lack of desire to build for local needs. We need to find ways to make developers build houses they have permission for. And there's a map of Winchester District with this huge area in the centre of South Downs National Park and the proposed green belt highlighted in purple across the south, which leaves the area around Hursley, Sparsholt, Sutton Scotney, Mitchellover Station and Alsford as the only areas remaining, really, for active development.
Stormy skies for dedicated runners. Runners braved heavy rain and winds for this year's Clarendon Marathon. Mud and puddles made the 26.2-mile cross-country route between Winchester and Salisbury even tougher than usual. It's actually Salisbury and Winchester, but be that as it may. Rotary Club organisers put in extra work to enable social distancing. J.J. Heath Caldwell, chairman of the organising committee, said, "These were the most challenging conditions we've ever faced. It didn't just rain continuously on the day, but on the Friday and Saturday before. There were mud and puddles everywhere. On top of Storm Alex, we had to manage the race responsibly to ensure social distancing because of COVID-19. Rumsey Road runners collected three pieces of silverware. Matthew Hamilton, 42, was the overall marathon winner with a time of 3 hours, 1 minute and 26 seconds. Becky Tovey, 37, was the fastest female at 3 hours and 32 minutes. And Tom Bray, 34, won the half marathon at 1 hour, 20 minutes and 20 seconds. And this article is accompanied by 8 photographs of the runners and some of the 200 volunteers plodding through mud and fields and over bridges and down roads and goodness knows what. And we know, some of us, what the weather was like, because 4 of us from the Talking newspaper helped out with the marathon last Sunday, as we have done for 8 years now. And golly, it did rain from the time we arrived at our station at about 11 o'clock until 4 o'clock, I think it was, when we left. We were drenched, but it was really worth doing to help out. And I think we'll do it next year.
I'm sure we will, John. Yeah. I'm sure we will. It's a nice financial reward for us as well from the runners.
Mm.
Pubs could axe staff. A pub group with 4 sites in Hampshire has said it could cut its workforce by at least a quarter after being hammered by lockdown restrictions. Clive Watson, chairman of City Pub Group, told the PA news agency that at least 25% of roles are at risk, but said this could be more in the end. The company, which runs 48 pubs, had around 1,000 employees prior to the pandemic. It has London Road Brewhouse in Southampton, the Westgate and Alfie's in Winchester, and the Inn on the Beach, Hailing Island. It has reopened 37 sites, but said it expects jobs to be hit at its remaining 11 sites when the current furlough scheme ends next month. With the sites that are currently closed, jobs will go, and we're now seeing how current restrictions will impact others, Mr. Watson told PA. The company has now started a consultation which could see staff agree to reduced hours, he added. He said he expects there to be a jobs bloodbath among pubs and hospitality firms once the job retention scheme comes to an end on October the 31st. He said the replacement job support scheme, which was announced by the Chancellor last week, is not suitable as a mechanism to save jobs in the pub trade. He said the business is fairly well protected from the impact of the 10 p.m. curfew and believes that people will change their habits as a result. He said, "I think we're already seeing some signs that people are coming to pubs earlier, and obviously that's something we're keen to see. The desire to go to the pub is definitely still there, but I think we'll see more shifts in people's habits as restrictions continue to change. I think Christmas will be tough, without Christmas parties and big groups, but hopefully we might also not see the same fall in January as people usually detox. We'll just have to see how things pan out." The comments came as the group hailed strong revenues since reopening, with like-for-like sales at around 80% of previous levels. It revealed that revenues tumbled to £12.1 million. And there's a picture of Alfie's Bar in Winchester with, yes, fairly quiet and nobody around the entrance.
Mm. City GPs urge flu jab take-up amid COVID. Winchester doctor surgeries are urging patients to make sure they get their flu jabs. The Winchester City Primary Care Network, PCN, of all three GP surgeries, St Paul's, St Clemens and Friarsgate, have over the last 18 months increasingly worked together to deliver better healthcare. They say the priority is a flu campaign to ensure patients receive the jab as soon as possible. The PCN says it's important that patients are aware that flu will still be circulating as well as COVID, and it's important to prevent concurrent infection. Patients have started to receive invitations to book a flu vaccination from all three practices and are being urged to book at the earliest opportunity. This year, more than any other, patients are urged to book with their surgery. Flu appointments can be booked online via Patient Access or the NHS app. Alternatively, people can telephone their practice to make the booking. GP Alex Rose said, "Patient safety is of paramount importance, and with social distancing protocols in place and access to the full medical record of each patient, we are uniquely placed to achieve this. The message is clear. Help us to help you and book your flu with your GP practice now." Mark Dryden, managing partner of Friarsgate, said, "Working at scale collaboratively makes so much sense for clinicians and patients alike. Working this way allows us all to share best practice and deliver better outcomes for everyone. Over the last few months, you are likely to have noticed a difference in the way things are done in general practice as we manage the COVID-19 pandemic. Badger Farm was used as a hot site to see all patients displaying COVID-like symptoms from all three practices. This meant we could keep our main surgeries as cold sites. We are extremely grateful to our 60,000 patients who adapted so quickly to many new ways of working in this period."
Fly tippers told on TV, "We're coming to get you." Meon Valley businessman Martin Montague's battle against fly tippers was seen on BBC television on Tuesday. Presenter Angela Rippon travelled to Bishop's Waltham to interview Martin about his campaign against the scourge of fly tipping for the programme Rip Off Britain. Martin is founder of the free app clearwaste.com and website which lets people report illegal dumping anywhere in the UK. He said, "It's great that the BBC has highlighted the problem of fly tipping and devote a whole episode of Rip Off Britain to the subject." Angela Rippon was lovely, and she was very keen to discover what we're doing to combat fly tippers. Like most people, she hates fly tipping, and I think she and the production team were shocked by the amount of illegally dumped waste there is around this area. "We've seen a big increase in fly tipping since lockdown began. Our figures suggest that the number of incidents has pretty much doubled. Many rubbish tips can only be visited during pre-booked slots, and too many people risk fines by using unlicensed traders who often then fly tip stuff. Local authorities are struggling to keep up with it. We need higher fines, the vehicles of offenders crushed, and prison terms for persistent waste criminals. The Meon Valley continues to be very badly hit. Fly tippers just don't care about the damage they do." Martin is determined to play his part in stopping them. He said, "I'll do anything I can to stop it, even if that means staking out grot spots to catch fly tippers in the act. We've got every bit of kit we need, from night vision goggles to cameras. So my message to fly tippers is, we're coming to get you. We give any evidence we gather to the authorities so they can prosecute the perpetrators. Fly tipping is really bad for the environment and can be fatal to wildlife, and it also costs taxpayers thousands of pounds to clean up. Money that could be better spent on schools or care for the elderly. My aim with the clearwaste.com app and website is to make it really easy for people to report fly tipping. And together we can reverse the scourge of fly tipping, which affects everyone wherever you live. And there's a couple of lovely pictures, one with Martin Montague sat on the opposite side, socially distanced, from Angela Rippon while they chat through the outline for the programme. And the other one, in Martin with high-vis jacket, boots, hard hat and broom, clearing up some fly-tipped rubbish with a huge pile of bags of rubbish behind him.
Cash from Coffee for Cancer Charity. Sparsholt Coffee Morning fundraising for Macmillan Cancer Support raised more than £1,100. The Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester attended the event, which was held on the village green, and it was well attended. Organisers have thanked all who donated the cakes, plus tea and coffee, and the helpers. A spokesperson said a great thank you goes to Jeanette Davis and Caroline Horrill, City Councillor and Sparsholt resident. Macmillan Cancer Support, founded in 1911, is one of the largest British charities and provides specialist healthcare, information and financial support to people affected by cancer. It also looks at the social, emotional and practical impact cancer can have and campaigns for better cancer care. Coffee mornings are one of the most common fundraising events for the charity, and anyone can host one. Visit the charity's website to find out how.
Poor service. An Alsford mum has expressed frustration with the stagecoach, saying the buses drive past college students. Karen Hawthorne told the Chronicle that her daughter was stranded 5 times in 7 days in September. She now awaits a response from the company after sending an email. She said, "We live in Alsford, as do many students who attend Peter Simmons College. The number of 64 buses repeatedly drive past students trying to get to college for 9 a.m. My daughter's experienced this 5 times in the last 7 college days. On one of the other 2 days, I took her, because she had a big assessment lesson, and the other one she didn't need to be in college. We pay £720 for a bus pass. There's no other way to get to Winchester. I work full-time and can't take her. I'm sure this applies to many parents. I've emailed the CEO of Stagecoach, who's passed it back to Stagecoach South, whom I had already emailed, and I'm expecting to wait for 5 to 7 days for a response, whilst my daughter waits at the bus stop. The Chronicle has contacted Stagecoach."
Youth Options CEO to retire. Mark Dixon, the chief executive of Hampshire-based charity Youth Options, is stepping down in late 2021 after 31 years at the charity. Mark has been at the heart of the organisation for many years. He has been an outstanding leader and helped the charity to navigate some difficult times, no more so than the last few months. Never has it been more important to deliver against Youth Options' vision that every child and young person should have the opportunity to realise their potential, whatever their life circumstances.
Club staying positive in pandemic. Winchester Rugby Club is a true community in the heart of the city, providing rugby for all ages from 4 to 60. Even in the current climate, membership has been buoyant, with membership sign-ups already in excess of 1,000 members. Even with good membership take-up, the club has seen its revenues slashed due to no first-team home matches with associated hospitality and Saturday afternoon crowds of around 250 supporters. Additionally, the clubhouse facilities in Abbots Barton that provide 7 days a week income from conferences, parties, luncheon clubs, etc., has been closed since March. To try and offset lost revenues, Winchester Rugby Club has introduced a number of new fundraising initiatives, including the new 200 Club for members. Members pay in £10 a month on top of their membership fees, with the chance of winning £200 each month. The winner of the first draw was Sue Chalice, wife of Vice President Brian Chalice. The club also has a list of 40 vice presidents, people that have been rewarded for their services to the club since its humble beginnings. Once again, the club is urging the vice presidents to renew their membership to give the club a cash cushion so it so desperately needs. Other initiatives being led by club president Robbie Sanderson is attempting to attract sponsorship.
District clearly needs to cut carbon output. Dirty gas emissions now exceed clean emissions from electricity in the district. That is the conclusion from an annual report by Dr. Bob Whitmarsh for local charity Winchester Action on Climate Change, sometimes known as WINAC. The district's total energy consumption has steadily increased since 2013, with carbon emissions on the rise. Locally, the biggest source of carbon is cars, vans and lorries. Between 2005 and 2018, the number of vans has increased by 55%. Jock MacDonald, chairman of WINAC, said, "Winchester District clearly needs to cut its carbon emissions to meet the UK target of reaching net zero emissions by 2050. And here at WINAC, we are acutely aware of how challenging this will be. We all need to cut our carbon footprint substantially, and there is no time to waste. Everyone can contribute and play their part, choosing to walk and cycle wherever possible, and otherwise use public transport. We urge the government and our councils to work with the people who live here to provide the physical infrastructure and laws to make this transition possible. In addition, many of the homes and offices in Winchester District are poorly insulated, causing them to use far more energy for heating or cooling than they should otherwise do. Whilst we welcome the government's Green Homes scheme to insulate homes and offices, they need to go much further than currently suggested to have any real impact before it's too late. This is the first time emissions from electricity have dropped lower than emissions from gas since records began in 2005. When compared with 188 other non-metropolitan English local authorities, Winchester District is ranked in the worst performing half for improving its emissions. In his report, Dr. Whitmarsh said, "The number of cars on our roads has also increased. So couple this with the increase in the number of people living in the district who drive SUVs, which have a carbon footprint almost five times greater than the average Winchester citizen, and that's before they've even left the showroom, then the climate impact of road traffic is clear."
And this next article follows on from the editorial comment that John read earlier, "The Man Who Saved Peninsula Barracks." Mm. The Hampshire architect Hugh Thomas, who had more influence on building design in Winchester than anyone else over several decades, died at the weekend after a short illness. Hugh, who was in his early 70s, was also responsible for leading the campaign to stop the demolition of this historic Peninsula Barracks in the 1990s. Plans for five-storey high buildings and a multi-storey car park were abandoned in favour of a sensitive transformation of the barracks into houses and apartments. The area involved was one-fifth of the entire city. Persuaded to come south from Cheshire in the 1970s by Hampshire's county architect Sir Colin Stansfield Smith, Hugh was asked to help spearhead prestige county projects. One early result was the Building of the Decade Award by the Royal Institute of British Architects for his design of Crestwood Community School in Eastleigh. However, after leaving the County Council and setting up in business, it was his love of the city of Winchester, its cathedral and its history, which underpinned most of his work. On his many history tours of the Peninsula Barracks, he would talk excitedly of his spat with the Ministry of Defence and the City Council. He said, "This was the ground where Henry V mustered his soldiers before the victories at Crecy in 1346 and Agincourt in 1415. How dare they try to bulldoze it all away?" The former architectural editor of Country Life and the architecture correspondent of The Times, Marcus Binney, currently the executive president of Save British Heritage, said that Hugh repeatedly proved himself a tower of strength to save. Most famously at the time of our Royal Institute of British Architects exhibition on endangered military buildings in 1990, he drew up this visionary scheme for the repair and reuse of the mighty Peninsula Barracks in Winchester. It won public support, secured planning permission, and helped find a developer in the depths of the early 90s recession. Hugh also designed the beautiful water garden ingeniously set on top of the parade ground so it didn't disturb the archaeology below. Mr. Binney said Hugh's unique selling point was that he was a superb draftsman and watercolourist who portrayed decaying and abandoned buildings as they would be once restored to their glory. He was a man of immense ability, charm and energy. Still more important was his understanding of old buildings and the most economic and sympathetic ways to repair and convert them. He was a pioneer in finding sensitive ways to convert historic barns without damaging their essential character by ugly new windows and doorways. Hugh's solution was to introduce windows in the gable ends and glazed doorways in the big barn doors. A documentary on BBC Two, Cathedrals of the Countryside, was entirely devoted to his work on old barns. Hugh Thomas, who lived on Southgate Street, recently attempted to assess the number of buildings he'd designed in Winchester alone. Well over 600, he calculated.
Cool.
He said, he exclaimed proudly, "There can't be a street in the city I haven't had a hand in." For many years, he designed, painted and donated several series of watercolours to be sold as the Christmas cards for the Friends of Winchester Cathedral. And there's three photographs, one of him in fairly recent times, one as a young man in the, well, younger man in the 90s with a barn restoration. Not much of the barn left, just the frame with the wooden framework. And a Hugh Thomas design on Eastgate Street, right by the roundabout where the statue is, which is designed by Hugh Thomas.
Quite an amazing bloke.
Indeed, indeed.
Really, one wonders why he didn't ever get given a title of some sort.
Yes, you expect some sort of award.
You do, yeah. Anyway, on to this piece, which is entitled Two Special Days Rescued for Two Lockdown Brides. It looked as though two brides-to-be were out of luck. They had planned their weddings to take place in October at two of Hampshire's stunning venues, but they were left worried when the Prime Minister announced changes to the rules, with only 15 people allowed at weddings from September the 28th. Just moments after Boris Johnson's announcement, the Grange Estates events team, who were organising both weddings, received calls from the couples. Julia Mitchell and Becca Cooper first helped Rebecca Ware's wedding, set to be at the Grange. They helped to push it forward and make sure everything was ready in time. Rebecca, a teacher from Bishop's Waltham, also had to persuade her head teacher to give her Friday afternoon off and let her miss the school's open day on Saturday. She said, "The support of my family and friends has been incredible. I couldn't believe how kind everyone has been, with the main questions being, what can I do to help? Working as a teacher and having only just got back to working in the classroom, seeking special permission to leave school early on Friday and then to miss the open day was really tricky. I can't thank the Grange team enough for being so supportive and accommodating. They are genuine people whose professional approach with a personal touch is exactly what you need when organising a wedding." Sasha Pryor, bride number two, a relocation agent from London, found Abbotston Farmhouse and Barn after being let down by another venue. Julia said, "We begged the guardians of the Grange, English Heritage, to allow special dispensation for the wedding to take place, galvanised a team into action to get the house prepared, which had been shut up all season due to COVID, and plumbers and carpenters were chivvied up to get the job done at the farmhouse." Sasha added, "We couldn't believe our luck when we stumbled upon Abbotston. It's just the perfect place for a micro wedding. What it has taught me is that weddings don't have to be lavish affairs with hundreds of guests. And there are two photographs of the two charmed couples. There's a photograph of Rebecca and Luke arriving at the Grange, and Luke is helping Rebecca step down from what to me looks like a white Range Rover of some sort. And then Sasha and James standing together at Abberston Farmhouse with, I suppose it's theirs, a French bulldog standing at their feet. Lovely day for both of them.
Yeah, very nice. Get involved with shaping the vision of the city's future. Winchester Town Forum is pressing on with the creation of a 10-year vision for the city and calling on residents and interest groups to help shape the future of the city. One Great Win, the project launched in March to gather views across the city, has set up working groups with local people to hear their insights and experiences, with their work leading to the new 2020 to 2030 vision. The workshops explore five aspects: lifetime, ecology, culture, movement and homes, with volunteers sharing their discussions after each weekly session on the One Great Win website. Everyone can now see what has been discussed in each of the groups and provide feedback online. All comments will form part of the discussion at the subsequent workshops this month. Councillor Kathleen Becker, Town Forum Chairman, said, "This is a great opportunity for people to get involved and tell us what they think. There's a lot of love out there for our city and some wonderful ideas about what the future could look like here and how we could work differently to make things happen. So we want everyone to have the chance to share their thoughts on all things Winchester. So do visit the website, take a read of all the exciting things being discussed, and leave your comments online." The One Great Win project is being delivered by a creative place-making team assembled by Boyle and Summers.
Student 19 killed by lorry on A34. A student who died after being hit by a lorry on the A34 intended to take his own life, an inquest heard. Oliver Washington, 19, was 2 months into his course at Winchester University when he died on November the 19th. According to fellow student Jessica Goldsmith, he had left his hall of residence the previous night after falling out with two other people. In a statement read to Winchester Coroner's Court, she said, "I went to his room to see if he was okay, but when he opened the door, he was visibly upset. It was mentioned to him that it was perhaps not a good idea to stay in halls that night, and I asked if he had anywhere else to stay. He said that he would just go. When he left the building, I followed him and shouted, 'No one is making you do this.'" Mr. Washington, from Billericay in Essex, walked into the path of a lorry on northbound carriageway of the A34 near Kingsworthy at around 4:45 a.m. In a letter to senior coroner Christopher Wilkinson, his GP outlined previous mental health problems. Dr. Simon Butler said that Mr. Washington had been referred to a mental health crisis team in 2017 after expressing suicidal thoughts. Mr. Wilkinson concluded a death by suicide. Before his death, Oliver had been a volunteer for Cancer Research UK and had just completed his Gold Duke of Edinburgh Award. In a statement, his family said, "Today's verdict is as we anticipated. We miss Oliver every single day and will love him forever. His tragic death on the threshold of his adult life and just as he was settling happily in Winchester is a grief beyond our powers of expression. Through the nightmare of these past months, we have been surrounded by love and support from so many people. Our family and friends have shown us generous and overwhelming kindness in so many different ways. We have been especially touched by the thoughtfulness and encouragement provided by Oliver's own friends who have stayed in contact. We are hugely grateful to our family liaison officer, PC Paul Freeman from Hampshire Police, who has looked after us in such a personal and professional manner since the dreadful day we met him last November. Our thanks also go to staff at the University of Winchester for their ongoing help and support. We look forward to creating a permanent memorial to Oliver at the university in due course. Finally, today, thank you to the coroner for conducting today's hearing with compassion and sensitivity, and to his team for their kindness in preparing us for the event.
Prolific producer hosts first live event since lockdown. The Theatre Royal opens its doors to a live audience for the first time since lockdown. Keith Scholey, executive producer for BBC One's A Perfect Planet, gave a talk, an event part of Winchester Green Week. It was hosted by Winchester College on an invite-only basis, and Mr. Scholey highlighted why the planet is in crisis and what must be done to prevent further damage. Headmaster Dr. Tim Hands said, "It was important to us to hold our first event since March at the Theatre Royal and on such an important topic. Keith's powerful message about the state of our planet and our own part to play in its future made a real impact on all those in attendance." The theatre had put in extensive measures to make the event COVID secure. Audiences were seated in socially distanced bubbles, with every other row empty and two seats between each bubble. Guests sanitised their hands before entering the building and wore masks throughout the presentation. Derek Newland, Chief Executive of Play to the Crowd, the charity that runs Theatre Royal Winchester, said, "It was wonderful to welcome an audience back into the building, the first since March the 15th. We're thankful to Winchester College for hosting their event at the theatre and for supporting our survival appeal. We thank Keith Scholey for highlighting the urgency of the need to address our planet's crisis, something we all must play our part in." Mr. Scholey is a British producer of nature documentaries for television and cinema, and a former television executive. He's the joint series producer of the Netflix original documentary series Our Planet. The Theatre Royal is still awaiting the outcome of its emergency fundraising appeal. Its deadline has been extended as the board has applied for a grant which has not yet been decided. And there's a couple of photographs, one of Keith Scholey on the stage with Dr. Tim Hands and with the audience. Unfortunately, it doesn't look very full, but that's the restrictions of COVID, and they are suitably distanced and all wearing masks. But it's nice to see the Theatre Royal in use, but be nice to see more people in there.
Mm. This is a charming little article which is written by the environment writer on the Chronicle, a chap called Andy Lester, and his headline is "Honeybee, an incredible insect that needs protection." Just before the early October rains started, I was watching honeybees on our buddleia in the front garden and started thinking about how incredible bees are. But I also reflected on how little most of us know about these incredible insects or what we can do to help them. There are an estimated 20,000 species of bee worldwide, of which the vast majority are solitary bees that don't produce honey. There are just 8 recognised species of honeybee, of which only 2 are domesticated and produce honey for human consumption. These are the western honeybee, found in Europe but also exported to North and South America, and the eastern honeybee, from Asia and exported to Russia, Australia and Solomon Islands. There are an estimated 274,000 hives in the UK. A typical honeybee hive will consist of between 20 and 40,000 bees. There will be one queen, several thousand workers, and several hundred drones. The workers are the females, and it's the females that both carry a stinger, look after the larvae, and harvest the pollen and nectar from flowers. So whenever you see honeybees on flowers, it's always the female out doing the work. The drones are the males, and their job is specifically to go out to congregation areas and mate with virgin queens representing other hives. A congregation area can contain as many as 25,000 drones from up to 200 colonies all trying to mate with a handful of queens. About one in 1,000 drones mate successfully. A typical hive in a year will see bees travel an incredible 55,000 miles between them to produce about 50 pounds of honey. That's about 23 kilograms. And they live a high-speed life, beating their wings at 11,400 times a minute. Our bee species, including solitary bees, pollinate 90% of the UK's wildflowers and 75% of global crops. Without them, many critical fruit and veg would not grow. The value of pollination to UK farmers is estimated to be worth at least £690 million a year. We all know that bees are in trouble from pests and disease, such as varroa mite, through to the loss of wildflower meadows. Intensive farming has taken a huge toll on bees, not just honeybees, but many of the species of solitary bee, butterfly, moth and wasp too. The best thing we can do is provide wildflowers for pollinators. It doesn't matter whether it's single pot or planter or an entire lawn. The important bit is we are all contributing to helping bees and other insects survive. And in turn, that will ensure our fruit and veg continue to get pollinated. If we work together, we can still turn round the fortunes of our pollinating insects.
Time is running out to see Marwell's Lego exhibition. This October half term is the last chance to see Marwell's larger-than-life toy brick collection called Supersized. The exclusive event, featuring more than 2 million toy bricks, is on display alongside the zoo's hundreds of exotic and endangered animals, and it runs until November the 1st. Featuring up to 30 models of curious real-life creatures, from predators such as the venomous blue-ringed octopus to the assassin bug, whatever that is, these species have been chosen for their colourful appearance. The peacock spider brick model is magnified 208 times larger than its 0.5 centimetre size, smaller than a fingernail. And a spokesman said highlights include a 3-metre tarantula and a towering 2-metre spitting cobra. And there will be new sculptures on display exclusively for half term. A 1-metre long Glaucus atlanticus, a species of poisonous sea slug. Plus a Marwell competition winner's drawing of a curious pink fairy armadillo supersized into a bespoke toy brick model. And Marwell Zoo also has a new Okapi play park. But, as with all these things at the moment, you need to book online. So book with Marwell Zoo before attending, but it's open till November the 1st.
Chronicle helps company move to new base. A local fish smokery is thanking the Hampshire Chronicle for its latest catch. Butler County Estates, BCE, has announced the opening of its new factory, kitchen and general premises in Winchester. Richard Butler says that he found the site after reading an article in the paper. "It's incredibly exciting," he said, "for us to reach this milestone, and it wouldn't have happened without the help of the Hampshire Chronicle." Back in early August, there was the article in which Keith Webb offered Winchester business property and advice. I missed it, but a friend of mine forwarded it to me. I called Keith, and thanks to him, here we are in our new premises in Winnell. This is a significant milestone for BCE, who in its second year of trading has a dedicated commercial space for making its products. It means production can now be increased to meet the ever-growing demand for its smoked trout pâté and fillets. Richard added, "This news comes in the wake of many recent challenges for the company. At the beginning of 2020, BCE had just entered its second year of trading and was still very much a fledgling home-based business. Despite a very challenging spring, and with many local markets closing due to the coronavirus, The company continued to grow after shifting the focus to selling and marketing online, whilst building relationships with other local businesses. It's the combination of our dedicated customers who continue to buy online, our commercial customers, the Hampshire Chronicle and Keith Webb, that has allowed us to reach this milestone today. Butler Country Estates has been making smoked trout pate and fillets for nearly 2 years. It sells its artisan products direct to customers at the many local farmers' markets in Hampshire and via partners that include bakeries, village shops and caterers who stock the products.
Broadway Market. Civic chiefs say the move of the Sunday market to the Broadway has been a success. The City Council has been experimenting with the move from the High Street and say it has been well received. Councillor Paula Ferguson, Cabinet Member for the Local Economy, told Cabinet, "We've been pleased by the widespread support to the change. It has not only allowed people to socially distance, but proved popular with residents, visitors and traders, and is driving up footfall in the High Street on a Sunday." She said there had been some teething issues and the trial would continue for another month with a view to making it permanent. It has always been envisaged that the development of the Silver Hill scheme would see the market use the wide expanse of the Broadway. And that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and thanks to John as this week's reader.
Hello and goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.